Welcome to the Matt Morgan Coaching Podcast. The fact that you're listening means you're ready to be inspired and empowered to take your life, love, and leadership to the next level.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we are talking about Enneagram Type 9, the peacemaker. And today I have on the podcast my dear friend, amazing 9, super healthy. His name is Seth Van Essen. Seth, thanks for joining us today, buddy.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for the opportunity. This is going to be fun.
Well, as we get going, like we do for every number, we're going to start with some tendencies. And I'm going to share some of these things. If you identify a 9, if you test it as a 9, listen to some of these and see if you can connect or resonate to any of these. Here we go. Number 1, I'll do almost anything to avoid conflict. I'm not a self-starter by nature. Sometimes I get lost in doing trivial tasks while things that really need to get done get put off. I'm happy to go along with what others want to do most of the time. I tend to procrastinate, if I'm honest. People seem to want me to be more decisive. When I get distracted and go off task, I give my attention to whatever is right in front of me. I often choose the path of least resistance. I find routines in home and work comforting, and I feel unsettled when something throws them off. Others see me as more peaceful than I really am. I mean, inward stubbornness gets really expressed, especially when people put demands on me. I have a hard time getting started, but once I do, watch out, world, I really know how to get things done. I'm a what you see is what you get person. I don't think of myself as very important. I mean, others are more important than me. People think I'm a good listener, even though I find it actually hard to pay attention in long conversations. I don't like to take work home with me. Sometimes I tune out and think about the past. I don't enjoy big social gatherings. Actually, I prefer quiet evenings at home with the ones I love. Being outdoors is very soothing for me. It would be selfish of me to spend the whole day doing whatever I wanted to do. So those are just some of the tendencies, but the way we find our number, the way we understand our Enneagram type is less about behavior and more about core motivation. And the core motivation of type 9 is to keep the peace and merge with others. 9s do not like conflict. Some people make mountains out of molehills. 9s are the ones who make molehills out of mountains. They're like, it's okay, it's all good. So Seth, I'd love to hear from you as we start. Like, when you first took the Enneagram and you tested as a 9, I mean, what aspects of the type 9 really resonate with you personally?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love the Enneagram just from the fact of it. I think it gives insight in words. And sometimes for me as a 9, it was hard to even put words to some of the core motivations like you're talking about. Just specifically, even as you started, was the peacekeeper. You know, just in general, I want to make sure everybody's okay. So even walking into a room, it feels like I can kind of pick up on people's, you know, looks or feelings, or if somebody's uncomfortable, I'm trying to do anything and everything to make sure that people are okay. That works, I think, on the outer circle of people I'm engaging with that I don't even know, but then also on the inner circle of my friends and closest to me of, hey, I want to be able to solve their problem or figure out a way to make it better for them so that we're all okay. And yeah, conflict is definitely a hard thing to, I try to avoid at all costs because that internally stirs up the waters and goes against my very core, you know, just how I'm wired to, you know, when it raises the peace and it's like, oh, it's not peaceful anymore. So yeah, all those things definitely resonate for sure.
I know when I go to your house and you host, you are such an amazing host because you are so attentive to other people's needs, making sure they got a drink in hand. Do they need anything? You know, do they feel comfortable? Is the temperature just perfect? You know, like you're so good at it and being accommodating to what other people need. And when you think about a 9, what's something you love most about being a 9?
Yeah, I think, in looking kind of at the history of a 9 developing, you know, I think there is a development in 9 and as we grow and we learn and what's healthy or not healthy. But one of the things that I think I love the most about a 9 is just being able to relate with lots of different people. It comes easy for relatability. And whether that comes out of an unhealthy place of saying, hey, I gotta make sure everybody's okay. I do think that the positive side of that is just able to engage lots of different, even Enneagram numbers, but lots of different personalities. Even, you know, my day job plays out, I'm in sales and do a lot of that side of it where that comes naturally then just to be able to connect even, you know, authentically of saying, hey, I want to connect with you. And I think that has grown or developed, but I love that aspect about a nine. It feels like it comes from a exciting place.
Yeah. One of the things I love so much about a nine, they're like a comfy chair. Like you just want to hang out with the nine. They're not trying to be impressive. They're like, what you see is what you get, but they're very accommodating. They're very go with the flow. They're not, you know, rigid in their ideas. They're very flexible and inclusive, which is why I love you. You're such a great host when I go to your house. I mean, healthy nines are seldom attached to their own way of doing things. They're extremely unselfish. They're natural mediators. A lot of nines make good counselors. And so those are definitely some of the things that are so powerful about a nine. And, on the flip side, there are things that all of us, you know, there are growth areas and there are things you're like, oh my gosh, I'd really love to grow in this area. Every single number on the Enneagram, we find our number one by our core motivation, but two is our shadow side. And the shadow side of type nine is sloth. That's their spirit animal. And sloth means that they don't assert themselves sometimes, especially in conflict, or if they think it might provide or cause conflict, that they will usually do what other people want rather than share their voice. They'll fall asleep to their ideas or their desires. And so, and so they don't always, or they're not always honest in terms of what they really want and fear that conflict. How do you see, or how have you seen, I mean, you're in your late 30s now. Oftentimes we see really our Enneagram type come out big time in our early 20s. How have you seen both your core motivation as well as the sloth, the shadow side come out for you?
Yeah. And I think kind of as I've worked through that, I think the place, so now we'll probably get into it, but even the tri-type of my three side of my nine, I've had to grow significantly in that just to operate in business and make sure that I'm actually achieving things. So when I hear the word sloth, it actually goes against the three. So the word that has kind of developed for me of the shadow side is really just the numbing out. So as you're talking about the sloth side, it's also me just shutting down to my own feelings, my own emotions, my own desires. And that has really reared its ugly head on the shadow side to say, hey, how do I step in and speak the voice of what I'm actually feeling, or being able to engage conflict with not just rolling over and, you know, playing dead and saying, okay, well, whatever anybody else wants, that's okay, to actually stand in and voice an opinion or say, hey, no, that's not the way we're going to do things, or no, that actually hurt me. You know, all of those things. I think one of the highest things that I've had to fight personally is just really this idea of disappointing people. So I would rather be have the short end of the stick on whatever equation that is, as long as I didn't disappoint somebody. So if I had to swallow my own anger or frustration or getting the short end of the stick, I would choose that. And then it turned into numbing out negative emotion.
Wow. There are layers to what you're talking about that are so powerful, especially for those of you who are thinking about maybe I'm a nine. Yeah, you talked about the unhealthy side. There's for all of us, it's not like we're either healthy or unhealthy. We're a mixed bag. It's like, listen, I was healthy in this conversation, and then 2 hours later with my significant other, not so much, you know? And so unhealthy nines do what you just said. They numb. They numb sadness, they numb anger, they numb their desires. And while average nines, you know, while they come off as sweet and easygoing, they're stubborn and oftentimes out of touch with their anger, and they overlook themselves feeling unimportant. And this oftentimes goes all the way back to like childhood. Like if there is a parent or a coach or an authority figure that asked you your opinion, and you gave it, and then all of a sudden someone else with a more more boisterous personality type. Like, no, I don't want to do that. Let's do this. Mm. And then that coach or that parent or that authority figure says, okay, let's do that. It oftentimes leaves the nine wondering, why did you even ask me? Mm. Am I even important? Yeah. Does my voice even matter? Yeah. And at such a young age, the wounding message is that no, my presence doesn't matter as much as other people. So what do I do with that? Mm. I either die or I have to survive. Yeah. And so much of our personality, the word personality comes from the Greek word persona, which literally means mask. Yeah. And so the mask that nines wear is, I need to meet the other needs of other people. I need to be the good boy. Yeah. I need to be the good girl. Yeah. And that's how I can maintain harmony and peace in my life. And so when you look back to your childhood, do you see any of that at all in your life?
Yeah, I mean, that's so good. And I think even as I've explored the Enneagram, putting language to that of, okay, the self-preservation type. And I think I relate very clearly to that under the nine of saying, okay, what does that mean? And my self-preservation side of the nine is, again, back to that numbing. I'm going to put aside my own desire, my own, because somebody else's voice matters more than mine. And in doing so, that's what keeps the peace. So even as you mentioned, survival. So I'm a middle child. So I've got an older sister and a younger brother and a younger sister. So being in that middle space, I think it created a space where I had to kind of adapt to an older sibling's opinion and thoughts. And then also my younger siblings were a couple years younger than me. So then able to try to figure out how to engage them. And then in a world growing up, there was seasons of maybe conflict with within marriage, within family, within external stuff. Well, in any of those conflictual settings, that's where I learned the self-preservation side, or somebody else has a louder voice or is more hurt or more angry or more needy in any one of those settings. So then it was, I got to make myself small and unnoticed so that somebody else can have their need met at the expense of my own need. That was actually a better place. But then even as you were talking about the good boy, the good girl, well, even again, under the Enneagram of the wing, well, my wing of a one really stands out to say, okay, I would play the moralistic perfection. I'm going to do everything right so that I don't ruffle the waters, so that I am not noticed. Because, okay, even as a little kid, if I disobeyed or I stood out, then I would get undue attention that would cause ruffles or cause the water to be not calm. And so then I operated very morally in a way that said, hey, I'm going to do all the right things, fit the guidelines, fit the boundaries, so that I wouldn't stand out in that world. And so that was the self-preservation side of my nine playing out in my wing to say, hey, you got to play this role, figure this out so that everybody's okay. The waters are calm, live at peace. And, you know, I think that that also has developed then now years later of how to unwind some of those things that I maybe fit into just by nature as a kid or the wounded spot.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for sharing. It's so powerful. The healing message for the nine is to hear the truth that your voice and your presence matters just as much as other people. And that conflict, well, very few people really like conflict, is something that we have to go through and that we can't just shove it under the rug or avoid it or fall asleep to it, even though that's our natural instinct to do that. It's immediate relief when we do that, but it creates lasting struggle.
Yeah.
The flip side in life is immediate struggle creates lasting freedom. You're going to have pain, but we get to decide when and how long.
Yeah.
And so to go through it, conflict is the pathway to true peace.
Yeah.
Conflict is the opportunity for true unity.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting how, you know, it is so antithetical to want to go into conflict. And yet that is the very thing you need to do, because so many nines, what they end up doing is sacrificing true peace on the altar of false harmony.
So good.
And so it's just fake.
Yeah.
they're putting on, like a three does, an imposter aspect, a chameleon, acting a part. Mm. And the part is everything's good.
Yeah.
When really it's not.
And I think as you mentioned that, I've become more and more aware of my own tendencies in that. And I think my growth as a nine has started on the outskirts. So with those, I know, you know, somewhat well to say, hey, they're my friends or colleagues or whatever. So it's kind of on my outer circle is what I describe it as, where, hey, I've learned to maybe do conflict there a little bit better and grown in the years to address things, voice an opinion. And that's maybe where my three tri-type kind of comes out, just in the business world or in that outer circle. Where it becomes a harder reality is on the intimate circle, those are closest to me. Because as you're describing it, I think when we understand it's actually conflict isn't an enemy of intimacy, it's actually as you pass through conflict is where you gain intimacy. But that's where there's maybe the most fear or the most kind of trepidation towards, because it doesn't feel that way as a nine. It feels like conflict is the opposite. I'm actually pushing people away, or I'm not going to be okay. I'm disappointing people to sort of go through the choppy waters. But now realizing that in my marriage and in my family and those closest to me, that actually creates more intimacy. And so that's been in the growth side of my nine. It's had to come through pain, but is also where I'm seeing the most intimacy or the most growth on the inner circle. And it was easy for me to maybe, oh, let's do it on the outer circle. That will play well out here and try it. But now as it got closer and closer to home, it became more and more challenging and continued pursuit to make that happen.
But, wow. That's so cool to see the journey of you having awareness. This is what I love about the Enneagram. It gives us awareness and language so that we know, why am I doing what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Why am I not showing up? Why am I not stepping forward? It's like, oh, because of this fear.
Absolutely.
This fear of conflict, this fear of like, I don't want to engage in that. And so, you know, even in work, so many people, they're obligers. And what I mean by that is that they meet outer expectations of their boss or coworkers, but fail to meet their own inner expectations and their own desires. And so they say nothing. And they're really good coworkers. They're usually the people that are the go-to people. They're the best.
Absolutely.
And so what people do because they're the best is that your boss or coworkers give you more. And you're silent. And so it's like, well, how do I engage? And I just had a conversation with a friend that was just saying a nine, and they're obligers. And they were telling me, I was like, well, they're like, I don't know what to do. And I said, what if you gave a window into your boss's world? Because everybody's trying to get their own needs met. And the boss is thinking about their needs. And so to enter conflict, it's not like, I'm not doing that. It's rather saying, hey, can I have 2 seconds of your time? Here are the three big initiatives that I'm currently working on. Here's the time that it takes that you've already asked me to do. If I choose to do the other thing that you're asking me to do, it's going to require one of these other ones to fall off the wayside or be delegated. So which one of those, boss, would you like me to stop doing for now?
That's good.
And the boss all of a sudden recognizing, oh my gosh, I can't have any of those initiatives be done. And so the boss then delegates it to someone else. Problem solved.
Yeah, so good. So good.
And so you were being an upholder. You're recognizing that you are both meeting the outer expectations and not falling asleep to your own.
Yeah.
And that's what healthy nines really start to do. You also said a couple of things that I think are really important. You talked about going into your three. And you talked about wings. There are four other numbers that nines connect to.
Yeah.
One is called your wing, which for you is your sounds like a one,
yeah.
A nine wing one.
Yeah.
Some nines are more of a nine wing. Eight, which is a very peculiar one.
Yeah.
And so you're peaceful, but there's moments that if someone robs you of your peace, you have no problem being aggressive and letting them know this is a unique one. And so the wings are in either an eight or a one for type nine. And then the other two numbers have to do with where you go in your happy place, which for threes or for nines is their type three.
Yeah.
When the arrow points towards your number, that's where you go in your happy place. And so nines by nature are not always self-starters, but once they get going, man, they're incredible. And they do really, really well when they continue to have accountability, because nines can get flaky or they can be like, I don't want to do that today. But it's like, it's when they have accountability, either a work coach or a life coach or a gym coach or a friend, to help them out, or a partner, they really do well to meet their own goals and connections. And so they go to the three. Now, on the flip side, in stress, your number goes away from you. And nines in stress go to type six. Type six is the loyalist, but one of the things that plagues type six is the constant worry of what if. And nines can go into that and become worst case scenario thinkers. You're amazing in your three. I mean, as in the world of sales and in real estate that you have, and the way that you are as a businessman, I see that side of you. You're so good. You are an incredible father of twins, and the way that you're so intentional, an amazing husband, and the way you serve. You're three, I see all the time. How do you see your six in the worry side? Does that resonate with you or connect to you?
No, I think it's it's interesting because as we talk about the Enneagram, it puts language and words. It's like, oh, how are you knowing? Who's watching my like inner world and all of a sudden putting words to it? And I think that is some of the six where that's not the world that I show oftentimes to people. A lot of people would look at me and being like, oh, so where's the anxiety? Where's the fear? Because I don't portray that. But I think it is having to do with the idea of insecurity or unknown, because that's not peaceful. So if I let my family down, if the budget isn't in line and something someday happens, then I'm actually causing peace to go away for my family. So I think it's still motivated by this idea of peace, of having things, not disappointing people, where then it lives in that world of anxiety, oftentimes where I'm like, okay, now it turns my planning mode on. So it turns my three on, probably an overdrive to overcome my fear that resonates in the six. But I was reading something earlier about the nine, and it says they are typically spiritual seekers who have a great yearning for the connection with the cosmos as well as with other people. They work to maintain their peace of mind just as they work to establish peace and harmony in their world. Well, I think that's so true of the nine. I mean, particularly for me, if my inner world is not at peace, I am not healthy in any one of the numbers. Even in my three, I'm actually operating in overdrive and it's not healthy. But if my inner world is not at peace, my fear is my anxiety, my what if, my planning ahead, I call it my prepper side of like, okay, I got to have it all figured out, make sure it's all in line just in case the worst scenario happens. That comes out and kind of rears its ugly head. So again, I think for a lot of nines, it's not only peace in relationship, but it's also internal peace. And,
So
you know,
powerful.
that idea of prayer, meditation, quietness of stillness of soul actually allows my six to basically calm down. Otherwise, it feels like oftentimes that can grow like kerosene on the fire, or my three actually go in overdrive to over prepare for my six that's not healthy. So I think it actually affects both sides. And again, it's been a long journey. And like you said, of some days are good and some days are not so good, trying to live out of that one inner side, the inner peace side.
I love it. I was just going to ask, how do you find that inner peace so that it manifests in your outer world? You talk about prayer and meditation, is one aspect for you that really does help. Are there any other things that you have also found that helps bring internal peace? And if you, or you can expound on prayer and meditation, like what does that actually look like or mean for those who are like, okay, cool word, I've heard of that, but what does that actually mean? How do you actually do that?
Oh, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, even from childhood, I grew up in a very religious family and community, and I think that has really formed or shaped my internal being kind of through the course of the years. And so that is super important in my daily life of even trying to get up early in the morning and be in a place of, so spend time reading, spend time journaling, spend time praying, even have formed prayers. I always say that even as a nine, it's not just what I can present, but I want to be formed by the things around me, so things that are bigger than me. So I even have, routine prayers that I will go through because I want to be formed in my mind. So it's those kind of things even entering in the day. which has been super helpful, I think, for me. And then even now through the course of the day where things can spin out of control fairly quickly, finding time or having enough discipline to step away for a walk, for putting my phone down, for stepping away from a problem and taking a breath, or sitting, you know, I've got a little park with a water feature next to my office where I can go and just sit. And it's like those kind of things to actually care for myself enough to, because I think that's the other side of nine, is we can be self, we don't care for ourselves very well. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes of like, hey, we'll go without a meal, or we'll be running at full speed, or we'll sacrifice sleep or whatever it is. And that can actually be at our own detriment. So even just personal care, when it comes to that, has been helpful too.
It's such a great question. I love that form. The question is, and based on what you just said, for everybody listening, is my inner me congruent with the outer me?
Absolutely.
That I'm projecting in peace?
So good. Yeah.
And if it's not, may you realize that you matter and that you can spend time. That's not being selfish. That's doing self-care.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. I'm curious for you how your nine is connected in relationships, right? Nines are in the triad of the 8, 9, and 1, which is the gut or anger triad. Gut means 8s, 9s, and 1s connect somatically. They can make decisions. Nines can walk into a room and get a vibe of if it's a good place or a bad place. It's got bad juju or good. Yeah. If a person is legit or not, right? If they're a good person or not, they can kind of feel that. Yeah. And then anger is something that we all obviously have, but 8s, 9s, and 1s have almost their first impression or emotion, but they handle it in very different ways. 8s externalize their anger. They're like the lion. 9s fall asleep to it because they want peace and not conflict. And 1s, it's like a smoldering anger. Mm-hmm. And so if you're like, inner world's not doing well, but you don't say it, I wonder if you, and this is maybe an unhealthy side sometimes of nines, of like, it's like acquiescence to then all of a sudden open hostility. It's like, whoa, like you tripped over a leaf and everything came out. Like, has that ever happened to you in relationships with your wife, Keely, who's also going to be on our podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny as you talk through that. I think we even have a joke just between me and my wife of like, all negative emotion in my world, so whether it's embarrassment or you feel shame or disappointed or any negative emotion that I have in my world, comes out as frustration. And I don't even say that it's anger, because that feels against my moralistic side. So it's like, oh, well, that's even too strong. So it's just frustrated. I'm just frustrated. And so we even joke about that, hey, I might have been embarrassed for the day or disappointed, and it's coming up as, well, I'm just frustrated. And so my wife would be like, well, what are you frustrated about? I don't even know what I'm frustrated about. It was just a general frustration. But for me, it didn't come out as blow up. It just came out as, okay, I'm just going to shut down. So then that has been the journey. We call it our downward spiral, even in marriage, of my wife needs engagement. Her 4 is actually expressive and wants engagement. That's actually how relationship happens, is to be known and to get all the emotions out and all of that. So we call it our downward spiral, is something would happen in my world that would cause me to numb, and it would then cause her to want more emotion from me, any emotion, positive emotion, negative emotion. I would shut down all emotion. And so she would be grasping at straws for just some kind of engagement. And I would shut down to a numb place on positive and negative emotion. And oftentimes that would bring out maybe even negative emotion on her side to say, I just need you to engage. And so oftentimes that would escalate things. And the more escalated it was, the more calm, cool, and collected I was, which actually caused conflict.
Yeah.
And I think even from taking a step back, sometimes the calm, cool, collected one looks like, oh, well, again, back from the moralistic side, is like, oh, well, they have it put together. So the one who's actually engaging to say, hey, I need emotion, could sometimes get the short on the stick and be like, oh, well, you just need to figure it out. Don't get angry. And coming to realize it was me numbing out was causing it. So I had probably more to participating in our conflict than I ever thought. But I thought, oh, well, I'm cool and calm, cool and collected. Why is this causing conflict? Because that's all I knew. But that was out of my unhealthy place. So the more and more that we've had to engage our relationship is me not shutting down, me expressing my negative emotion, me defining what frustration means, that it's actually not just frustrated at the dog or at life, but it was like, oh no, you were wounded today. Like you were hurt, you were embarrassed, you were disappointed with something. Like those are okay emotions, and let's talk about it. Let's express those emotions. So again, it's our what we laugh at now on this side of things, but express, don't repress. And my wife tells me that all the time.
Oh, that's a good word.
Yeah, it's been a good journey, but we're having to unwind our downward spiral in the understanding of how we both engage, and that it's not at odds, it's just different. Mm-hmm. And so it's been good.
There's a couple of things that I want to point out that are probably really helpful for those of you who resonate with a nine and those of you who are listening that maybe you are connected to a nine. And those of you who are a nine, number one, it sounds like you call the downward spiral. It sounds like there's maybe a planned meeting. Nines are almost never going to want to have that conversation. They'll just keep repressing. So if you have like a scheduled time, like, hey, Wednesday after dinner, on dishes, it's once a week. It creates an opportunity where both of you are emotionally prepared mm-hmm. to talk about the not so fun stuff.
Yeah.
And that there's a safe environment to say, okay, let's do this. Then that is something that's shared that could be really powerful. Second, now nines, you don't want conflict, right? So you're thinking if I share this thing, then she or he is going to hear that I'm so mad or I'm so upset and that feels too strong to you. Said, I'm going to be frustrated. Well, you can do a number scale. Hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is like a 3. It's not that big of a deal, but I'm telling you now so that I can be forthcoming and honest and upfront. And I also don't want it to metastasize mm-hmm. and grow like a cancer and become a 9.
Yeah.
And so that actually is a way to be able to share to that. And so on those of us listening who are thinking, okay, I am dating, married, engaged to a 9, and I will talk to them and I can't seem to create that, you know, opportunity for them to share. So that safe space of doing that is one, but also it's day-to-day things. Like, where do you want to go to eat? And oftentimes I know exactly what your nine's thinking. I don't care, whatever you want. And every number, our superpower, which that is the superpower of the nine, is that they're so easygoing and laid back, mm-hmm. is also our greatest weakness when it goes too far. Mm-hmm. And that's the falling asleep. So sometimes what you have to do is two things. Number one, ask, is that your final answer? Mm-hmm. Because usually their first answer is the coping strategy,
yeah.
not their real heart. And the second thing to do for those of you in relationship to a nine is narrow the focus. Let's say, if you say, where do you want to go to eat? It's overwhelming for a nine because there's too many options. Nines and fives have the lowest amounts of emotional energy on the Enneagram. I'm not talking about physical energy. I'm talking about emotional energy. Do I have the emotional energy to enter into this conflict? Even picking a restaurant could feel like conflict. And so if you are like, okay, I want Thai, Chinese, or American, I'm not sure which, but one of those three, just narrow the focus and ask them or ask her which of those three options work best. Now, if you ask that person and they say American, and you're like, actually, I want Chinese. They will just go along with the flow and get Chinese most likely. But you know what you're doing? You're accidentally reinforcing the shadow side or this wounding heart that my voice doesn't matter. Hmm. So why did you ask me in the first place? And so to try to prevent that and to allow their voice to come, ask them, narrow the focus, and go along with it.
Mm, yeah,
then you'll get that nine to keep talking and keep sharing and keep communicating. And so that's a really great, you know, tip, I think, for those of you who are going to be in relationships. One of the other things that I think is really important for those of you who are in a relationship with a nine is you might notice this person, and I'm curious about you, Seth, like a lot of nines say, I'm like, ADD brain, you're like, oh, look at the bird. Like they they forget, or they do whatever is in front of them. And so, for example, one of my buddies, he's married to a nine, and they moved into a house. They got two boys, and he's like, listen, like, what should we do? And she's like, why don't I just focus here and get these core things done at this new house and move in? You take the boys over to on an adventure, and that will actually be more helpful for me. And he comes back And he's thinking there's all this expectation of like things organized, like your socks in a drawer and underwear, you know where it is. And he comes home and she literally has art on the wall. Nothing practical at all. And he's like, I was gone for 2 days and this is what you did? And it's like, I got distracted. Or even the one thing I felt like I was supposed to do that feels like conflict to a 9-9. So one conflict. So they just like, oh, well, that has to get done. Or I'm in the garage. While I'm in the garage, like the car doesn't have any gas. While I'm at the gas station, you know, oh, I should probably pick this up. And that reminds me, I need to go to the store. And they just kind of like do all these things. Okay. And people who are connected to a 9 are like, are you being passive aggressive? Like, what the heck? You just saw this, like, and you just kind of like went along and got distracted. Does that ever happen to you, or has that happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's as interesting as you put those stories. I think I don't necessarily relate so much to like the squirrel kind of aspect of like jumping to new things, but I think internally, I still have a organized pile system, whether that's an internal from my brain, or even just physically in the closet. And so it's, again, a running joke between me and my wife of, hey, you ask me where anything is, I'll go find it. I'll tell you where it is. So there's a disorganized organization, because when it's too put together, it can feel conflictual if it gets out of line. So there needs to be enough adaptation even to my piles. If you come to my desk, I've got lots of sticky notes and everything everywhere. But you ask me a question, I'll know exactly where it is, when it got there, and how I took the note. But I don't want somebody coming in and organizing my space. So I think some of that plays out maybe in a different way of, you know, there needs to be enough flexibility and enough organization that I can adapt as on the fly, you know, even with some of those things. So I think, yeah, it plays out maybe in that way for my side of my 9.
But thanks for sharing. You know, one of the things is that there's really three types of 9s. These are called subtypes. Yeah. There's the self-preservation, the social, and the sexual. The sexual is more like one-on-one relationship. And the way that works is that it's kind of like a three-layered cake. It's like there's a top layer that's maybe more like me. Middle layer, you know, I do sometimes, and, you know, bottom, not so much. And so the self-preservation is the person who wants to preserve their own inner peace at all costs. And so sometimes they'll fall asleep to anger. Literally, some of these people need to take a nap. Mm-hmm. And when they're mad or upset or feel like conflict, they just like, I want to make sure that my inner harmony is what matters most. The social 9 is actually way more extroverted than the other 9s. These other 9s want to be, you know, out of the party by 9. Please get me home. I don't want to do this anymore. Yeah. And but this 9 is way more outgoing, and but they're very much concerned about everybody else's needs. You know, like, are you good? Are you good? Are you good? That's the social 9. And then the sexual 9 is very much connected to the person they're talking to, and oftentimes they'll find themselves agreeing with this person. Oh yeah, me too, totally. And then afterwards being like, why did I say that? I don't agree with that at all. And so just to be able to make that person feel good, or like they're on their boots. Which of those three layers resonates most with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, probably that middle one,
the
where
social,
the
that's
social
what I see
aspect of, if you ask anybody in my sphere, most people would think I'm a 3. So yeah, that's the mistype that everybody sees me operating out of, that which is the social 9, and that's the side that I live out of a lot, just whether it's,
yeah,
you know, friend settings or circles or my job. A lot of that just forces that, which I think, you know, relating to other 9s that are listening to this, what happens is when we leave the social setting, that's where our emotional energy is not, it's not done at the end of the social night. It's done an hour later after we sort through all the emotions of everybody. Mm. So at the end of a night, I'm saying, oh, did that person have a good time? Oh, I should have, oh, I forgot to ask them about their dad who was in the hospital. Like all the things that should have been done or could have been better, or maybe I should follow up with them this week because they mentioned that their job was hard. So I should probably reach out. So my emotional energy doesn't stop at the end of the party as much as it stops an hour later after I sort through all the emotions internally. So I think that's where
that's really well said.
Some of the other 9s might relate to that. And that's where we get our exhaustion, and it's hard to maybe ramp that back up again. But I think it is also, you know, again, back to when you mentioned, hey, what do you love about a 9? it is being able to engage with a lot of people. So there is a side of that that gets exciting. And, you know, even I talk about it, but it's like, hey, I can actually rally troops really well, because when a nine is face to face, sometimes it's conflict of, do we agree? But if I rally a group of 10 people for a common goal, then there's actually less conflict because we're all rallying around a common goal. So I've seen that as I've developed, that actually creates peace in my world when I can rally the troops to a common goal. So whether that is in business or even at the park of, hey, we're just gonna play some football, right? Us 10, here's the teams, let's go. Well, my nine actually is, people are looking like, oh, you're a go-getter, you're an achiever, let's go, you're making things happen. It's actually my nine saying, if we rally around this a common goal, then there's actually peace because we're all going to the common goal. So putting words to that has been, you know, very powerful from the Enneagram side, but that is maybe what plays out in that social.
Thanks for sharing. You talked about mistyping, and I think that this is something really relevant for so many people. So many people who are nines, if you take a quiz or a test, you don't show up as a nine. Yeah. You show up as a three or a six or a two or something else. And why is that? Nines, if you look at the Enneagram diagram, they're perched at the top of the Enneagram, which means they have the superpower of being able to see the perspective of everyone. They can put themselves in the shoes of like someone who has one perspective and then someone who has a completely opposite perspective, and they can listen to them and be like, oh yeah, I understand that. And I get that. And that's their superpower. But as a result, they can mistype. And yeah, it sounds like you mistype as a three because you are that outgoing social nine that is very energetic and very achiever oriented. So that's something really interesting. If you're on the fence and you're thinking, I don't know, you know, because this actually gave me a different number, the quiz is just there to point you in the right direction. Yeah, but core motivation and shadow side, those are really the pathways to look. So, well, as we close out here, if there was one thing you would like other numbers to know about nines, what would it be?
Yeah, you mentioned the word chameleon earlier, and I think that has resonated with me for a long time. And I think it initially came off as I've been growing, developing, trying to find my true self of like, hey, what's actually going on inside of me? Is this been a false self all the way along because I'm trying to keep everybody at peace? And so I almost took that as a negative initially. And just a shout out to the other nines, I think giving you just encouragement that a chameleon doesn't mean you're inauthentic, that oftentimes your chameleon-ness allows you to relate to people. It isn't meaning you're not being your true self. I think there is growth on that. But for those who are not nines as well, that when you look at a nine, don't be offended when your perception is like, oh, well, they're just adapting to everybody, so they don't even have a backbone and I'm so frustrated with them. That is actually maybe them finding their true selves in the process. And it's not like, oh, it's this some other piece that they're hiding or not being real with you, or it's a false self. So I think for me to give myself permission that just that word, I think, was a negative word to me. And I'm like, oh, I got to not be a chameleon because of my nineness. And in turn, that has actually become a superpower to say, no, as you do this, you're not authentic by relating with people. You're not, disingenuous because you can connect truly and authentically on that level with somebody. And it doesn't mean you have to agree with everything, but anyway, so I think that's in hindsight over the last, 10 years of wrestling with this stuff and the Enneagram, putting words to it and all that stuff. It was a negative side for me. And in turn finding, well, that wasn't actually disingenuous at all, but there's been growth in it of when and how that all plays out. And then also for those to learn around me that, no, I haven't been fake. It's actually my true self to relate to you. And so it's also the superpower. So
that is great wisdom for nines and all of us who are threes.
That's right. That's
right. To be able to hear. So, well, Seth, thanks so much for sharing your heart and your vulnerability into being a nine, and really appreciate you having on today.
Hey, appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Morgan Coaching Podcast. Subscribe below, share it with your friends, and if you want to take your life, love, or leadership to the next level, check us out online at mattmorgan.com.